From SHAPE NATO base near Brussels, Belgium, I'm Suzette Gorlot, the Dean of the University of Oklahoma's College of International Studies, and welcome to Worldviews. Croatian writer Dubravka Ugresic fled her home after criticizing the nationalist movement that engulfed the Balkans.
I was accused by media, by my fellow writers, by my colleagues at the university of being a traitor and being a witch.
Today we continue our month-long series about international literature. But first, Rebecca Cruz joins me to talk about Malta assuming the presidency of the European Union and the violence and growing refugee problem in Myanmar.
This is an ethnic group that has actually been labeled by a number of human rights groups as the most persecuted ethnic group in the world, and yet we hear very little about them.
That's all coming up after news from NPR. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot. Rebecca Cruz, I'm here in Belgium at a very interesting time when the small island nation of Malta is becoming the president of the EU right now. 28 members rotate the presidency every 6 months so that everyone has a chance to serve as president and set the agenda. But we know that this is a very difficult time for the EU right now. They're dealing with lots of concerns, economic crises, migrant issues, Brexit obviously coming up. So what are we to expect from a small country like Malta being the president of the EU right now?
Well, a little difficult to know what to expect, but Malta has officially come out and said that they have a couple of priorities going forward, and those are migration, the single market, working on security, social inclusion, the EU neighborhood, as well as a integrated maritime policy, which is interesting. But Malta, of course, is an interesting country, the smallest in the EU, and they actually this week were also listed in a report by the Green Party within the European Parliament, who claim that they are a tax haven, and were they not a member of the EU, they would be listed on a blacklist of tax haven countries. In fact, through the report, they went through and found that there are some corporations within Malta that pay absolutely no corporate taxes, and that if they were to take the money that could be taxed from other countries, that other countries are losing out on as much as 4 billion euros. So that's a significant concern, as you say, at a time when the European Union is really needing to kind of unify, come together, and bolster itself going into a year where they will be losing a member, or at least the process of losing a member begins. But as you said, you're there in Belgium. What are you hearing?
Well, I have an interesting class here. I'm actually at a NATO base, and I've got a class full of NATO officials and troops from lots of different countries. But they're also European Union members, and they've expressed many worries and concerns about the state of the European Union. They're very skeptical, actually, about the future of the EU, about its economic and military security. They're worried about what's happening in Europe. They're concerned about everything going on migrant-wise, economics, security with the terrorism attacks here in Europe. So, but I think Malta is an interesting country to pay attention to because, like you mentioned, it's the smallest country, but it is on that Mediterranean route for migrants. They are not a staunch opponent of migration, as is many of the other members of the EU, and they're much more pro-European, especially more so than the last presidency, which was held by Slovakia, which was very anti-immigrant and really not terribly interested in more integration. And so it'll be interesting to watch what happens there. But from my position here in Belgium, I'm definitely hearing an earful about what they're thinking about the EU right now. Well, let's move on to another sad story out of Asia and the country of Myanmar. There continues to be an escalation in violence between the Myanmar government and the Rohingya Muslim group, an ethnic group that has developed some sort of insurgency, but also is being oppressed and driven from the country and killed in mass numbers. What do we hear about what's going on in Myanmar?
Yeah, this is an ethnic group that has actually been labeled by a number of human rights groups as the most persecuted ethnic group in the world, and yet we hear very little about them. In the last couple of months, though, we're looking at 60 to 65,000 of this group, as well as other ethnic groups within Myanmar that have been pushed out. That doesn't count the number of internally displaced persons, which are also significant. This is interesting. Myanmar, Burma, whatever one wants to call it, they have been in the longest civil war in the world, really in some sort of civil war since after World War II, when the British left. There was a period where they were within a military junta for about 50 years, and then it looked like things were turning in a more positive direction in the last half decade or so. In 2011, it looked like democracy might be coming about. But this was also a time where you saw a number of these ethnic groups, and there are about a half dozen of them that are vying for control. There are insurgencies involved. And so they really started to gain in power and influence. And we're starting to see attacks. So this recent episode started about 3 months ago when the military, or some military members, were attacked by a group of 300. This has led to a massive military crackdown all across the country. As you mentioned, the aftermath of that, murder, rape, all sorts of horrific things. What's interesting is that they do have a somewhat democratically elected leader in Nobel Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi, she's a global figure. And she is being heavily criticized for not being able to kind of be the buffer or to control the military in this situation. So just as you said, a very sad and difficult situation. The camps that exist right now, the UN has come out and said that they are wholly inadequate. And this is on top of the decades of internally displaced persons and refugees that have fled the country.
All right, Rebecca. Well, thank you for the update on that issue that we hear very little about, actually. So thanks for being with me today, and I'll see you back in the studio next week.
All right. Safe travels.
We'd love to hear your thoughts about this discussion or answer any questions you might have. Leave your comments in the Worldview section of KGOU.org, or like us, follow us, and interact with us on Twitter at WorldviewsKGOU and at Suzette Gorlat. Next, I'll talk with Dubravka Ugresic. She's a Croatian writer whose books focus on what she calls the literariness of literature, but she also writes about political topics. Her criticism of nationalism in the former Yugoslavia led her to flee her home country. I'm Suzette Gorlat, and this is Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlat. I'm joined now by Dubravka Ugresic. She's an author and the 2016 winner of the University of Oklahoma's Neustadt International Prize for Literature. She is originally from Croatia and fled her homeland in 1993 for her opposition to war and nationalism. Dubravka Ugresic, welcome to Worldviews.
Thank you.
So, Dubravka, you're from the former Yugoslavia and obviously experienced war and conflict there, but you're a writer now and you've written about these experiences. Can you just kind of take us back to what those experiences were and kind of how that led you into the world of writing literature about this part of the world?
Hmm. First of all, I was a happy writer. Because I studied literature, I started as very young writer. I published my first book while I was a freshman. No, not freshman, but the second year. I was born a literary person, I would say. So then after finishing my studies, I immediately got a job at the university. So I was working at the Institute for Theory of Literature. All in all, I lived like a happy mouse in a huge chunk of cheese, and my references were literary, and my first books were, some of them are translated into English, like Lend Me a Character, or Fording the Stream of Consciousness. All those books were very literary. And what interests me as a former student of comparative literature was so-called literariness of literature.
Well, what do you mean by that? They were very literary.
My short novel, Steffi Speck, or Steffi Zweck, In the Jaws of Life, is just a sort of a parody on romance novels. And it is a sort of experimental because it deals with a lot of graphic, you know, markers and signs. And the short story collection, Lend Me a Character, or there was a first also edition in English, and the title was Life is a Fairy Tale and Other Stories. I'm playing with well-known classical stories, let's say, with Alice in Wonderland. So I'm playing with those highly literary patterns, as Gogol's story, The Nose, or let's say Tolstoy's story, Kreutzer's Sonata, or and so on. But then what happened is that, I mean, Yugoslavia fell apart. There was a huge, unexpected raise of nationalism. The war started. All of that happened in 1991. It lasted until 1995. In the meantime, because I could not resist but to write about that, thinking that people will understand that, but they didn't. So I was accused by media, by my fellow writers, by my colleagues at the university of being a traitor and being a witch.
Because you weren't supportive of the nationalist
because
movement.
I was not supportive of nationalist movements, and I think that it was, in fact, a form of fascism, but somehow nobody recognized that as fascism. If you have concentration camps, as we had in Bosnia, for instance, if you have, I mean, extermination of Serbs in Croatia and the opposite in Serbia, what is that then, fascism? If you have vocabulary of fascism, then it is a form of fascism. If you have attempt of historians, of politicians, ideologues, to link Croatia, now independent Republic of Croatia, to that Croatia, Nazi puppet state from the Second World War. So how can you call all of that?
So when you were exploring these things, and you said it happened in 91 and ended in 95, I mean, this has happened obviously very quickly, and it lasted a short period of time.
Fact.
So how did this happen? I mean, was this kind of an undercurrent that was there, that was just kind of the lid taken off to reveal this underlying...
Nobody understood. Yeah, I think that somehow very smartly and foxily, all the ideologues of those politicians of those newly formed state, which that hatched from former Yugoslavia, meaning Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, Serbia, Montenegro, Macedonia, and Kosovo. So all they played on that, you know, background of expectations and interpretations that people would understand simply in that way. Soviet Union as a communist empire fell apart. So Yugoslavia as a communist country fell apart for the comprehensible reasons because of repression Serbs did to Croats, or let's say because of dictatorship, or because of need, liberation movement, need for democracy, this and that. But it wasn't quite like that in Yugoslav case, because Yugoslavia was not part of a communist bloc. It was a little bit different. It was open. It was this and that. So I'm not going to explain all of that. But I think that they, those ideologues, they worked on that background. They wanted to be understood as the victims of communism, which was not entirely, I would say, the case. The best is to see what are the results of all that war.
That's Dubravka Ugresic. She's an author and recipient of the University of Oklahoma's 2016 Neustadt International Prize for Literature. When we come back, we'll talk about how her experience in exile outside of Croatia has influenced her writing. I'm Suzette Gorlot, and you're listening to Worldviews. This is Worldviews. I'm Suzette Gorlot, the Dean of the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. My guest is the Croatian author Dubravka Ugresic. Just before the break, we were talking about the nationalist wave in the former Yugoslavia that eventually led her to leave her home country. So as you are writing about these things and the result of what happened there, I mean, how did that influence what emerged in your own work, and how has that been received? I mean, obviously, you mentioned the writing that you had done before was not well received because you didn't agree with what was happening. You didn't take that party line, I guess. So how has your writing been received now, and especially given that you said this was our choice, more or less saying your fellow Yugoslavs, your fellow Croats, your fellow, country people, citizens are responsible for what happened here?
Yes, I think they are. But I'm not accusing anybody because it is extremely dangerous, and then it is not fair to accuse people, because majority of the people in such situations, they try to stay alive. So that's why they are compromising with situation. They are always compromising with the situation in order to stay alive or to protect their children or to protect their jobs or to protect their status or social status or whatever. In fact, the biggest fear of human beings is a fear of exclusion. And this is a very fertile terrain for fascism, not to be excluded. That's what was happening on, let's say, psychological level. I decided to bear the consequences of my opinions. And I left. I left in the pretty old age. I left Croatia and my job and security of everyday life. I exchanged for nomadism, for exile, for not knowing where I'm going or what I'm going to do else. And the only idea which, in fact, kept me in my intellectual shape was the idea to survive as a writer and to continue writing. It sounds a little bit pompous when I'm talking about that, but that's how it was. So I first spent a year in Germany, then I spent a year in the States as a Bunting Institute fellow. Then I got something in Amsterdam, in Netherlands, and I moved there. And somehow, bit by bit, after a couple of years, I decided to settle in Netherlands. And now I live in Amsterdam. That's the story.
Well, this is such a challenging story, Dubravka. It seems to me that, you know, the work that you're doing and obviously the things you love to write about and how that is, how you're displaced from your home in this way. But how has this ultimately led to the work that you're doing? Tell us about some of the work that has resulted from this experience.
And then, of course, with all of that, I simply realized that I can't prolong with my concept of developing this literariness of literature, that life was so strong that somehow it penetrated into all my ideas about literature, and not ideas about the literature, but it became my I became quite obsessive about writing about what was happening, because I think it is important. It is not about Croatia. I mean, Croatia is just a little example, which was closest to me, because I knew the hold that a landscape and environment. It is not about former Yugoslavia. I think it's a story which concerns almost every country in Europe, at least, or former East European countries, because we see patterns now in Hungary, in Poland, in Czech Republic, in Slovakia, in former Soviet Union, in all those states. So it's in Albania and in Bulgaria. So it's not just a report from Little Croatia.
So you're seeing how this experience is generalizable beyond just the
I would say
the Balkan area,
the same.
But beyond Europe too. I mean, you have a book called Europe in Sepia. You've obviously written primarily about Europe, but you're seeing this happen, or you're envisioning that these are struggles, and you call it life was so strong. I would imagine being life was so difficult and challenging that you're seeing that more
and
broadly.
And then if you put that into a global context, then you get also in that reading of those patterns, you get additional meaning, and so it's.
So is the mission then finally, Dubrovka? Is the mission then to write about these experiences and generalize in a way about the human condition, about the experience in a more global context, to shed some light on the human condition?
No. It's not my attempt to generalize. No, nothing like that. You know, literature and concept of literature, idea of literature is my main thing. And I'm writing fiction, I'm writing novels, I'm writing short stories, and this is not that only I'm writing about politics. More than that, my new book, I just finished the manuscript, is mostly about literature and about nomadism or migrations. I can't say that I wouldn't agree with that. I'm only, inspired by political events.
Well, Dubrovka, thank you so much for sharing this perspective on your writing and your work. And I know I, for one, will look forward to reading more of what you've written. So thank you so much for being here today. You've been listening to my conversation with author Dubravka Ugresic. You can find more information online at kgou.org, where you can also subscribe to our weekly podcast. Worldviews is produced in partnership between KGOU and the College of International Studies at the University of Oklahoma. Katie Holland prepares our research, Sam Dupre produced the show, and Jacob McClelland edited this interview. For Rebecca Cruz, I'm Suzette Rolotte.